Welcome to the Fatherhood is Lit podcast, where we talk about the best of times, but also pay respect and learn from the crazier times. Our presence matters. Take a ride with us as we show the world how we make our presence felt. Fatherhood is Lit. What's up, Fatherhood? I'm over here today with my good friend, Paul C. Brunson. Paul, how are you doing?
Amen. Can I just say thank you?
Oh man, thank you, man. You know, you've been through so much. Now you got your own kids, super entrepreneur, chilling with Oprah, jumping off of yachts in the sea. Come on, man, you're killing it.
I was gonna say, you saw that? You saw that?
I've heard.
Fair. That's fair. But I say thank you. I said this right before we started, but really, you are man, you know, fatherhood is it's great, it's all that, but it's also one of these where it's trying and tough, and you're just a great inspiration to so many of us dads out here. So thank you.
Oh man, thank you. You know, I wanted you to on this podcast because you and I have spoken so much about business and have given like so many gems to people that I figured who better to ask questions about dad life. Especially for somebody like you that have helped adults find love later on. You know, the game has changed, man.
Yeah. It's incredible, man. And you know, the whole like landscape around dating and love and relationships, it's really drastically changed in just the last kind of 6-7 years. And I would venture to say that there's been more substantial change in the love and dating space in the last 7 years that there's been in the last 700 years. So it's definitely a different, you know, different landscape now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like both of us have sons, which is crazy. You know, I have 3 kids, 3 sons, you have 2. But it's incredible. Like I put out a post the other day where it said, I can't wait to shoot my daughter's first boyfriend. And you know, somebody knocked it down. They reported me on Instagram, which is cool. But that's the way I feel about my son, where it's like, you know, he's gonna be 12 years old. We haven't had this sex talk yet, and I feel that no girl is gonna be good for him. And I think it all comes back to like Tinder, Snapchat, and all these crazy things.
Yeah, but really, you believe that no girl you haven't met, you know, maybe it's not someone for him, but you don't have like a niece or a young cousin. Or a family friend's daughter that you think highly of?
So yeah, you know, I do have people that I think highly of, and I say, you know, I want my son around a little female like her. Okay. But they're so young that everything changes.
Yeah.
Know, especially with the internet. But we do have a few people that I look at. Listen, I live in Staten Island where people are actually telling you, hey, your son is a great child. Maybe my daughter and him should hang out together. Almost like an arranged marriage type of thing. And I look at my wife and I tell her, hell no.
No, but you know what? why you say that? Like, I'm telling you, that's not just a Staten Island thing. That is happening all over the world. And here's a bold prediction right now. So arranged marriages still now, I don't know what the exact percentage is, but it's still a significant percentage. Like double digit percentage of marriages are arranged, mostly happening outside of the United States. Right. But you even have some. Very small percentages happening in the U.S., but I predict that's going to increase. And the reason why is because what you're seeing more than anything right now is you're seeing a breakout of socioeconomic status as the main driver for marriage. So back in the day, it was, you know, when I say back in the day, hundreds of years ago, even to the point where you could say it was maybe 50 years ago, marriage was really about proximity. You know, if you lived in the same town, right, then there was a higher likelihood. Like my grandfather from Kingston, Jamaica, you know, he only had 10 options in the town. You know, my grandmother was one of the 10. Like that was all he had, right?
Slim picking?
Pickings, right? Grew up outside of, you know, a little bit outside of Kingston. And talking to my grandmother said, no, I had slim pickings, Paul. There was only like 2. So I had to take it. But so it was proximity. And then what happened is, and this is really what kind of gave light in the late 60s, 70s is with birth control, right? With the proliferation of birth control, you saw the increase of choice. Because then what ended up happening is women were now, they could say, you know what? You know, we could have sex, but we don't have to get married. Whereas before birth control, it was, we would have sex, a woman would get pregnant, and then they would, you know, they would get married, right? Just because they had the child. But with birth control, there became more choice. It was, okay, so now I can have sex with lots of people, men, women, I can have sex with lots of people. We don't have a child, so therefore I'm not forced to get married. Oh, I could look for anyone to get married. So the choices began to increase. And then you fast forward to today and you think, okay, is it ethnicity? Is it religion? What is it that typically drives two people together? Well, ethnicity, age, gender, all these things play a very important role, but nothing is more substantial than socioeconomic status.
But even that's tough though, right? Like how do you gauge that now in the world of Instagram where everybody's a model?
Because, you know, it's not really going down digital. Like digital Instagram, all this social media, they're ways to meet. But once you get offline, that's really where you begin to see what's really happening. And I'm telling you, socioeconomic status is it. And it's not just like the wealthy marry the wealthy. It's like the wealthy marry the wealthy. The upper middle class, they also marry the upper middle class. The middle class marry the middle class. You know, the poor marry the poor. This is really how we've divided ourselves, for good or for not. This is how we've divided ourselves. So to your point around arranged marriages, man, I wouldn't doubt that to not be a thing in the future.
Yeah. I think you're right though. I think it might it will come back a little bit quicker. Simply because we've seen it all, where, like, you know, adults my age and your age, you know, I'm 39 years old. I've seen when we had to do things offline and now they do it online to, you know, back to offline. And it's almost like I would like to be able to guide my son a little bit more when it comes to dating or maybe his love life, but not too much. Like, I don't want to be too intrusive, but I would like to at least tell him, hey, you know, that girl that you see online that you think she's in the same socioeconomic class as you, she's actually just doing it for the gram. Yeah. You know, so don't get fooled by it.
Yeah, yeah. But also too, man, I think, you know, so my boys are 5 and 8. And so, you know, already you could begin to see, okay, you know, you could begin to see how dating, not even dating, I just call it just like messing around, right? Is how it could start early. Even when I look back, man, I was literally, I think I had my first quote unquote girlfriend at, I think I was in the first grade when I had my first girlfriend. It was either kindergarten or the first grade. So it was early. But one thing I believe is very important is that, you know, our kids will be what they see. And so it's very important if we're trying to raise kids that have, you know, high self-esteem, and which is the most important characteristic you could have going into a relationship. Because when you have high self-esteem, that means you have high standards. That means that you just won't accept anything. That means that you won't be bullied, right? So in order for them to our kids to have high self-esteem, they need to see it within us, the parents, right? They need to see it within us. And as they begin to see us exhibit high self-esteem and okay, you know, okay, so dad has high standards. So this is what high standards mean. Then they'll be what they see and then they'll more likely have those same high self-esteem, high standards themselves.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I mean, now with you know, with the boys in tow, like for both of us that we have boys, you know, one of the things that I find difficult is keeping it like really, really real with my kid, with my son. You know, we haven't had that sex talk yet. But one thing that I want him to know is, like, I got married at an early age, at 26 years old. I'm still married. That doesn't have to be your course, right? But I also don't want to tell him to go out there and just be a freaking, like, male dot or something, you know, chasing all the girls around and dogging them out. Right. So how can we balance that where we tell them go have fun, but not too much fun?
Yeah, you know, it's crazy, man. I think actions speak so much louder than words, and so I'm a big believer in children modeling, you know, people who they look up to. And I say people who they look up to because sometimes it's not their parents, right? So in your case, though, clearly, right, your boys look up to you. So the first step is what you already do very well, and that is you have a strong relationship with your children so that they look up to you and they respect you, they trust you, right? Then the next step is for them to just they're just observing you. And this is the one area that we can never devalue. And that is that when we are in the most, you know, adverse situations, right? So, you know, you're driving and somebody cuts you off and then they get out their car and they're, you know, yelling at you, they're cursing at you. What do you do in that situation? You know, when, like, what do you do? The point there is that when we are in the most trying situations, that's when our true character comes out. And that's what our kids are really looking at. That's really what they're going to model. And so ultimately, if what you're saying is you want your sons to respect women, right? You want your sons to be able to enter relationships, and whether they're getting married earlier or later in life, you just want them to be able to respect a woman. Then the most important thing you could do is respect women. The most important thing you could do is also respect other men, right? The most important thing you could do is just respect people. Yeah. And by doing that, that is what sets the standard for your child. That really is where it begins with teaching our kids. It's not in the words we say, it's in our actions.
So you mentioned having like high confidence in yourself, right? That it gives you like high standards and everything. How do you keep them from being overly cocky or conceited with it then?
I mean, that's a major, especially right now. This is a major issue because what we have right now is because everybody's on social, right? I see it with my son all the time. My oldest, Kingston, who's 8, he'll immediately like go to see how many times something's been liked. Like, that's his thing, or how many times something's been viewed. And what I see him doing, unfortunately, is he's beginning to see the value in someone else's opinion versus in the actual content itself. And so for me, what I try to do is I try to then push him through, okay, it actually doesn't matter how many likes or how many times it's viewed. It matters, you know, what's your opinion of this? Right. This is the most critical thing. So just walking him through that one little thing is helping him to not be a dick. Right. To not be the guy who just is after what everyone else thinks and what everyone else desires, but actually to have his own, you know, his own levels of self-esteem. So I think, you know, with parenting and I will say this is I'm not a parenting expert. I don't know if my boys are going to grow up to be serial killers, or great creators of something special. But what my wife and I try to do is we try to let them know that their opinion is what matters most, right? Their understanding, whether or not they're learning from something, there's a lesson to be derived, that's more important than 50 other opinions or the opinion of, you know, the president. And I hate to bring in the president in this, but let me say this about Agent Orange is that he actually, I think there's a great service that he's giving us because I think when you and I grew up, Jay, it was like, you always respect your elders, right? And you always respect people in position, right? Especially like my Caribbean household, it was like, you know, if someone is a CEO or someone's a boss, like you always have to carry a certain level of respect. Whatever they say goes. Like that's the thing, right? Yeah. So here you have the president, the highest office in the land, and you know, I tell my boys all the time, his opinion means nothing, right? His perspective means what, you know, just, or I'm sorry, just because he's the president, it doesn't mean that it's the truth, right? You, what you have to do is you have to be able to create an understanding for yourself. That's what I tell Kingston. So, you know, long story short is, in order to create, you know, in order for your, I think for our kids not to feel entitled, it's about them understanding the value, the true value of things, and that you shouldn't just arbitrarily assign value, like, to the president just because he's the president.
You still got to think for yourself, right? Still have your own opinion and read through it.
Definitely.
Yeah, I guess one of the hardest things for, like, as a dad for me is still going back to the kid and you know, like, we all get those moments when we see our kid and we say, oh, that's my boy, or oh, that's my girl. And some moments is like, I don't want my wife to see me telling him great job, because then she might feel like, oh, wait a minute, were you like that? You know, were you dogging me out when we were together in the beginning? You know, so it's like one of those situations where I think it's hard for fathers to talk to their kids and keep it all the way real with them without kind of like digging themselves a hole.
Yeah.
Right. But so how would you even have conversations where, you know, your wife might not agree?
So I think, you know, I'm trying to think about conversations that I've had where I think she might not agree. You know, with my wife, there are, I think a blessing that we have is there's very little things that we disagree on when it comes to our kids. And so part of the successful raising of a child is for the parents of that child, whether they're together or not, just to be on the same page as to how you plan to raise, you know, your children. That's very important. And so once you begin to really get on the same page and then you have these same kind of standards, then those standards create a roadmap. And so therefore, you know, okay, there may be certain areas that my wife and I have agreed that we're not going to talk about with our children. Like you were saying, you haven't had the sex talk yet, right? Maybe you and your wife have said, okay, let's hold that for a certain day, or let's hold that to do it together, or let's hold that for whatever reason. Right. That's so you want to create the standards. I truly believe strong children come from strong parents, and strong parents come from strong communication between the parents. So that's really where it begins. But then I also believe that your children should feel like they could come to you, and the value of having, you know, parents, especially two parents, is that a child could feel like they could come to dad for one reason or mom, you know, for another. And the only way to open that up is to let them know, here are all the, like, whenever you have this issue, you come to me. Whenever, you know, you are feeling this way, you could always talk to me about, you know, A, B, or C. And it's having just that open level of communication. And sometimes the open level of communication isn't about, you know, you saying it. It's just about them understanding that they have an opportunity with you. And what I mean by that is, one of the best parenting tips that I've ever heard, ever, especially when you have multiple kids, is spending one-on-one time, scheduled one-on-one time with your kids. So, you know, when you have more than one child, you tend to do things, a lot of things together with your entire family, right? You know, but schedule one-on-one time would mean that, okay, one Saturday a month, you know, my youngest Liam, who's five, knows that we're always going to go on a date, right? Or we're always going to go out. And he knows that he's going to have that time. So by the time he's 13, 14, 15, we're still maintaining that. He knows that, okay, I have this time with just my dad, right? And that's, and just by doing that, what you're doing as the parent is you're creating a safe scheduled space where he knows he can now bring certain topics to you at that time. right? But he would know that otherwise if you didn't have that kind of scheduled time. So creating the structure, having the strong communication with your spouse or with the parent of the child, these are all, I think, very important as to, you know, helping not to raise asses.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I agree because I think, you know, that especially the one-on-one time, like that's something that I preach to my family, especially when you, you know, when you have multiple kids, giving them that one-on-one time shows them that they, that you still care about them individually, right? Whereas not collectively. And I think that, you know, my biggest concern was how am I going to get this sex question going with my son? And you kind of answered it without having to answer it. And it goes back to those one-on-one times where we've had so many one-on-one times. Sometimes it's just the car ride to school that we could actually present these conversations in a slick way where you could joke around about it and be like, hey, you know, my oldest son is Jaden. Hey, Jaden, you know, did you kiss a girl yet? And that could lead to another conversation where they treated it as a joke, but you just opened up that line of communication.
Yeah.
And then you could get a little bit more serious. Cause that's my biggest fear is the, you know, my biggest fear is the sex question, man. Like when I was growing up, my dad, they did the typical thing. When I was one or two, maybe 3 or 4 years old, kindergarten, you know, they lined you up with another girl and they told you, oh, kiss, we gonna take a picture. Cool. That's like the introduction, right? To the other sex, I guess. Then when I made it to like 14, 15, his way of teaching me about sex was actually sitting me down to watch a porn. I can't do that with my son. Like I can't find it in myself to do that. So I'm like stuck.
He sat you down, and then what did you say afterwards?
Oh, I did what any other little 12-year-old, 13-year-old would say, man. Ew, this is nasty, Dad. Why are you showing this to me? You know, he wanted to show me. My dad believed in real life lessons. So he, you know, we were from the ghetto, we were from the hood, poverty stricken. He never held back. So his way was, I'm going to put this video on. You're going to see two girls getting it on. You're going to love it. And then you're going to ask me questions. I didn't really ask questions. I just looked at him like, man, you're nuts. You know, I was already learning about this without it. But sitting there with him kind of made me a little uncomfortable. And I honestly don't want to do that with my son.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting, man. I think, you know, looking back on it, it looks like he kind of just like sprang it on you. Right.
Yes.
It was just like a shock, you know, versus already you're beginning to, you know, with the humor in the car, like you're already opening up the space versus just, hey, 13, come sit down, watch this porn. Like you're already, you know, you're slowly, you know, slowly opening it up. I also think too, like, for example, you telling me that story. I think you telling, or us as parents telling our kids, this is what happened when I was little, but more so, this is how it made me feel uncomfortable, or this is how it made me feel scared, right? Anytime I think children could see their parents in a vulnerable position and then begin to associate it with, wow, so when daddy was little, he felt scared too. Right. Mm-hmm. Then they begin to feel, OK, then being scared, that's an acceptable feeling. That's OK. It's OK to be scared. And because it's OK to be scared, I can now share why I'm scared. Right. With mom or dad, you know, so that's very important because, you know, one thing like you talking about, you threw the O card, the Oprah card at the beginning.
Yeah.
One of the things that Oprah talks about a lot, which I think is the gospel, is that at the end of the day, we all are searching to be heard, right? Some of us want more than that. You know, we want to be understood, but we are all at minimum searching to be heard. Like we just want to make sure that, you know, we're recognized, right? Our thoughts, our ideas, they're recognized. In particular, they're recognized by someone we respect. That's what, you know, our kids are searching for every day. Do the people that I love the most, who are typically mom and dad, do they hear me, right? And I think you telling these stories about being a child and having certain feelings that are the same feelings they are having, it gives them a better opportunity to express how they're feeling, and then therefore they'll really feel heard and understood.
Oh man, I love it. I love it because this is, you know, I went to the Dad 2.0 Summit in San Antonio this year, and every dad that came to me and told me, "Yo, James, you know, I love what you're doing. You're killing it." My first thing to them was, "Yeah, I'm killing it. Can you guys help me? Can you tell me how I'm gonna talk to my son about sex?" And it was like this, like the room would just stay silent for a while, where everybody was like, "Well, man, that's a tough one. Like, maybe I'm not there yet, or maybe I did it wrong." And it's one of those conversations where it kind of made me feel like maybe I'm not ready. But just listening to everything that you were just saying about how we're setting that up already by these little, you know, these little questions and actually breaking it down and telling them how I was fearful of certain things, I'm actually more prepared for it than I thought.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of actually sitting down, having that one-on-one and not giggling the whole time. Because I'm going to tell you now, I'm going to laugh. I'm gonna sit with him and I'm gonna be like, "Well, Jaden, you know, have you ever wore a condom before?" And I'm gonna break down,
because
you know, I'm it's uncomfortable, right? But it's needed. I think it's a necessity, especially for you. Like, you've seen the best and the worst when it's come to dating. You know, you've helped males, you've helped females. Does any of those things like create a biasness towards your way of how you're gonna teach your kids about sex? Like, all these stories there that you said, man, I definitely got to bring this up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely. Like, you know, I think we take everything that we all, you know, as professionals learn in our professions, and it's smart to take that and bring that back into our personal life, right? If it can make us better. And my, you know, career for the last 10 years has really been, it's been about interpersonal relationships. And so it's one of these where it's funny. Sometimes I feel like already I'm arming my kids with, you know, with knowledge that they could use for good or for bad. You know, it's one of those where sometimes I laugh and say, "Man, like, if they really want to, they can use what they know, and they can get people to do anything they want." You know, it's one of those, like, they can manipulate people, like, they can do whatever they want. So, but I do, I bring it all in, you know, because, you know, at the end of the day, what makes humans human is that we are social creatures. That's really what we're about. We're about connectivity with other people. And the way that you do that is through your relationship skills, you know, so whether that's a professional relationship, a platonic relationship, a romantic relationship, there are skills there. And so the best thing that we can do is to become as expert as possible in relationships as adults, and then to arm our kids with that early on. Because the kid, in my opinion, if you threw out all the kids who are getting, they're inheriting, you know, massive wealth, if you just throw all those folks out and you just say, "Let's just look at the kids who have been able to grow in their careers and really crush it." Like, I'm not just talking about make lots of money, but I'm talking about to be successful in life, right? To make their mark in life, to be happy. I would bet all the money in my bank account that a large degree of their success is based on their interpersonal skills. And so they're going to be outliers, like Mark Zuckerberg, who everyone says doesn't have any interpersonal skills. They're going to be outliers, but the vast majority of them, you know, you're going to say, "Man, it was the fact that their interpersonal skills are like so incredible that's the reason why they're able to do what they do." Like, actually, let me throw this out, because you and I have talked about him a lot. I know that from a business standpoint, and even I think from a family standpoint, I think he's someone that we can all look to and learn from, and that's Diddy. You know, you could look at, you know, I think you and I have both analyzed him to the point where we've talked about, you know, case studies about him and just like really try to be analytical about him. And from my observation, I think that his number one skill, Diddy's number one skill above many, because he does have a whole suite of skills, is his interpersonal skills. Like, he is world class in his interpersonal skills. And it's that has been, I think, what's really carried him through over the years. And so interpersonal skills are everything.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I agree with both of the things you were saying, especially with Diddy, the way that he could use his words and connect with people and talk to them and still have a little bit like empathy towards people. And then Zook on more of like the nerdier side. Like, can you imagine him telling his daughter the sex talk and telling her, well, you know, back in 2003, I started an app called Facebook just so I could get girls.
He wouldn't even talk to her, man. You know what he'd do? He would like create a freaking PowerPoint or, you know, some kind of org chart and do the sex talk.
He's going to get somebody from work. He's going to delegate it. But yeah, you know, this is great. I think you've shown me that as a father, you're never really prepared for like these bigger talks, but there's a way to like guide yourself and to get yourself there, right? Where I don't think I'm prepared. Like I don't know why I feel like this, but I don't feel like jumping at the waist and jumping to my son today and telling him about the sex talk. Like, I still want to hold it off, but I feel like I'm way more prepared than I thought I was. Like, I thought I was going to mess this whole thing up and say something dumb, you know, like almost like give him like a player vibe when I'm trying to keep away from that. But I still want him to explore the world, you know, I still want him to do his thing.
No, Jay, no, you are ready. And you know why you're ready? Because you're concerned about it. You're thinking about it. That's how you know you're ready, man, is that you're not just, you know, there's various levels of stress, right? And what I've noticed about the like top performers, because that's been one of my things for a long time, is interviewing top performers in different aspects of business, or it could be athletics, it could be art. The commonality among all these top performers is that they feel there's a hit of stress, there's a hit of resistance before they do whatever it is they do. Like before Usain Bolt goes out to run, he feels, you know, he doesn't feel, you know, he's not complacent. Like, he goes out knowing I could lose, knowing I could break my leg, knowing I could tear, you know, a hamstring. He goes out with a bit of apprehension. There's a bit of stress. He's thinking about it. And because he has those things in his mind, it actually helps him to perform better, because his mind is like recalculating as he starts running. Okay, don't land too heavy on this foot or I can do the hamstring, or make sure I do this so that I don't break this. And that actually helps him to perform better and not have the injuries, not to fail, right? That's exactly what you're doing, is you're conscious about this. You're going out, you're talking to me, you're talking to other people, you're aware of it, so that when the time does come, you are going to be able to outperform, if, you know, versus you not doing any of this and, you know, your son just sitting down and then you just saying whatever, right? So you should really be proud of yourself where you are right now. And you have to tape record this conversation so you could then show everybody.
You know, I was about to go out on a limb and say, yo, Paul, give me a date. I'm gonna make this happen. And then I'll follow up. I think it's still going to happen. I think it's going to happen. I have to do it before the end of the summer. If not, I'll feel like pure trash. Simply because he's going to the eighth grade in middle school. I know eighth grade, middle school. Oh man. I know the fun I had. I want to make sure that he's safe. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think this summer is coming up, but going back to like what you were just saying with, you know, some of the people that you've gotten to interview, like you've even interviewed Swiss Beatz, who's killing it out there too, as a dad and everything. You've been able to meet people like Oprah and sit down with billionaires. Has any of those things even compared or come close to the birth of your first son, or even the second?
Yeah, that's a great question. No, I mean, it's one of those where not by far. This is the best way I could describe it, is meeting people who are at the top of their game, like an Oprah or like a Swizz. Like, what it does to me is it made me feel human, because I realized, wow, you know, like meeting someone like Swizz, I was like, wow, you know what? He's a human just like me. Like, he's a dude just like me. Like, he lives and breathes, like he's achieved all of these great things. I can also achieve all these great things. Like, you know, we're just human, you know, which is very empowering, because sometimes you look at these folks and you think they're truly exceptional. And I'm not shading, you know, like the Oprahs and anyone at all, but I'm saying that what they had is incredible belief, but they made me feel human, which is good. But my kids, they make me feel superhuman. They make me feel, at both 5 and 8, like I am, you know, I have superpowers, you know? And that is, there's a certain special feeling that you get. And it didn't happen for me instantaneously when my boys were born. I mean, I was in love with them the second that they were born, but that superhuman feeling kind of grew over time, right? Yeah. You know, and it comes out in little ways. Like, you know, I'll see my son draw something, like Kingston. He used to draw when he was like 2 or 3. He would draw these stick figures, and he'd draw a little stick figure of, or actually, no, this is when he was maybe 5 or 6, because Liam, his younger son was, or his younger brother was born. He would draw like a stick figure of himself. He'd draw a small stick figure of Liam, his younger brother. He'd draw then one of mom, and then he drew this huge, huge, like giant to be dad.
Superman.
And I remember talking to a therapist, and a therapist was like, man, he drew you so large because he sees you as larger than life.
Man, that's a quotable, bro.
Man, it just, it's one of those where to have this little thing, believe that there's nothing you can't do. It's the, you can't, I can't even put words to describe that feeling.
You know, it's crazy because, you know, you and I talked before the conversation about what took me so long to start this, right? And I think what the motivation that actually guided me to even interviewing again on Skype and, you know, whatever services we use, the motivation is that there are dads like Swiss Beats out there that you look at and you say, hey, these guys are larger than life. But in reality, they're just dads just like us. So the things that we do with our kids, more than likely, they do it too. The yes. Things that we do wrong, the pitfalls that we encounter, they encounter also. So doing a podcast like this actually allows people like me to feel like I'm normal, right? Where it's like, that dad isn't super dad. I'm super dad. We're all super dads.
Yes.
Which is really, really needed. So now going back to you, you know, can you tell me that one moment that you really look back now and you say, damn, like, this moment defined fatherhood and it showed me that fatherhood is really lit.
Oh, man. I mean,
I know there's so many.
It could be that moment. You know, with the drawing, it's every day. It's like this morning, my son, Liam, running down the stairs. So, you know, he was sleeping. I woke up early. I was going down to our basement to work out, and he came down the stairs. And normally when he wakes up, he's looking for his mommy. So, you know, he came down the stairs and I said, oh, are you looking for mommy? He said, no, I'm looking for you. You know, just those little moments are, you know, they can bring tears to my eyes, those little moments. Yeah, and when you feel like, man, this little human being, you know, weighs 35 pounds, you know, can say, you know, 2 sentences or 3 words and bring tears to my eyes. Like, that's when you know it's something incredibly special. You know, that father is something incredibly, incredibly special.
Yeah, man, it definitely is, man. You know, I left out your bio in the beginning on purpose. I want the listeners to know that I'm taking a different approach when I interview people on this podcast, and it's not about how dope the person is career-wise or how much money they made or who they know. It's more about the lessons that we could pull from another dad. With that being said, can you tell people how they could follow you and maybe follow along your journey, since we didn't do that in the beginning?
Yeah, I like that approach, man.
I mean, we're dads, right? I know you. You know me. To the world, you are Super Paul. To me, you're still Super Paul. but you're a dad just like me.
Yes.
So yeah. I don't need to know all the cool things that you've done. I know the cool things you've done. You know, I know these things. We've talked before, but I don't think that that's what makes you special.
Well, there's something cool though. There's something very cool that I did last night. And that is my youngest, he doesn't like wiping his butt after he poops. And so I was wiping it and then he was shaking and then I got like poop all over my leg and my arm. And I was thinking, man, like this is the most humbling thing in the world.
You got it. They caught you.
God, man, this is like the most humbling thing.
He pooped on you in the best way.
I am at Paul C. Brunson, Paul C. B-R-U-N-S-O-N, on, I think, almost all the platforms, you know, LinkedIn, IG, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all those good ones.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, to the listeners out there, you know, this is what it's all about. You know, you got to make your presence felt. Paul is somebody that has always made his presence felt in fatherhood, but also in business. Definitely follow along if you want to learn things about entrepreneurship, marketing, even dating stuff. Paul is the man when it comes to dating and matchmaking. This guy has traveled all over the world matchmaking. I think you're going back to the UK soon, right?
Another show? Yeah, doing another series.
Is it part two of this series or the first one?
This is my third season out there.
Of the celebs gone dating?
Yeah.
What? That's incredible, man. And you took your kids out there though, right? Like then you moved them out there for like for the season?
Yeah, yeah. They come with me. So the rule that we have is if I have to travel longer than 2 weeks, my family comes with me.
Oh, I love it, man. That's gangster. That's a real gangster right there.
Yeah.
You remind me of Big Boy, man. Big Boy won't do music acts if they interfere with his son's football games.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how much you pay him, he's going to the football game.
Yeah. Man, see, I'm telling you, man, that standards is like when you have standards in life, you have a higher quality of life.